This past week, Donald Trump was indicted altogether, again. Watchers of all things Trump are saying that this indictment is the largest weight that's ever been placed over his head that could actually see him live out the rest of his life in prison. Trump defenders are saying this is a weaponized federal government coming after your, I'm pointing a finger at you, your First Amendment rights. With us now to review the facts of this indictment of Donald Trump is attorney and professor emeritus of political science at St. Peter's University, Professor Alan Sanders. Thanks for being here, Professor.
My pleasure, Chris.
And learn more about St. Peter's University, stpeters.edu. See the great educational opportunities that they offer. I want to start with the beginning of the indictment. When you look at the United States of America versus Donald J. Trump defendant, in the world of politics, in the world of a republic, what's the magnitude of those series of words?
Well, the magnitude is very serious. I mean, the fact that there's an accusation that the President of the United States, and this is the second time in a federal indictment, has violated the law. Now, the second indictment basically alleges that the President has violated his oath of office. That is to say, he conspired, according to the indictment, to remain in office after he had lost an election that was fully fair and free, and without any systemic flaws or problems. Now, that is basically an allegation, although it's not stated as such in the indictment, that's an allegation of a coup, maintaining power and staying in power, even though democratically you have been defeated. And so it's a very serious indictment, and it's a very sad indictment that we have a situation where a president would be accused of such a thing.
We have the indictment. You've probably seen it on our website, the downloads page. But in case you haven't, the counts real briefly here. Count one, conspiracy to defraud the United States. Count two, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding. Count three, obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding. Count four, which I'll get into a little bit with the professor, because in my mind, this was the most interesting and maybe for Donald Trump endangering, conspiracy against rights. This has been labeled a speaking indictment, Professor. What's the meaning behind that term?
Well, the speaking indictment is basically an indictment in which the prosecutor alleges and states a number of facts pertaining to the indictment. Now, a prosecutor has a choice of having a bare-bones indictment saying, you know, we accuse the defendant of violating this and that statute, or a speaking indictment such as this one in which evidence is laid out in detail. And that's what it means, laying out the evidence in detail to indicate that the prosecutor has important facts, has researched all those facts, and is laying them out for public scrutiny.
But that's not to say that we're seeing every card that Jack Smith is holding.
No, absolutely not. This is a laying out of the facts which support the violations of law that the prosecutor is charging, but it's not by any means the full facts that the prosecutor could bring to bear at an actual trial.
Speaking of the trial, I don't think we'll see live cameras in the courtroom. My hope is that, because I think it would be fascinating to watch, almost like a throwback to the Watergate hearings from way back when. But the thought of Mike Pence, former vice president, in the witness box testifying against the former president, again, this is history writing itself before our eyes.
Absolutely. I mean, aside from the fact that the indictment itself charges the president with violating his oath of office and trying to stage a coup, essentially, we've also never seen, as you point out, a vice president testifying against his president, against his boss. Now, what's interesting is that's what the indictment alleges, that the vice president refused an order of the president to violate the law, according to his notes, as indicated in the indictment. We've had the vice president now go on the record publicly accusing the president of violating the Constitution, and now we face the prospect of the vice president actually testifying at trial, if it comes to trial, against the president. That's historic. We've never had a vice president testify or allege that his boss violated the Constitution. That is unprecedented.
Going through the indictment, and it's the way it's structured, I think, is great in its selling point, because first, I alluded to this in the introduction, the right-wing media is trying to make this sound like it's an attack on we the people's First Amendment rights. You don't have to even go that far in the indictment, even though it's 45 pages. Paragraph 3, the defendant had a right, like every American, to speak publicly about the election and even to claim falsely that there had been outcome determinative fraud during the election that he had won. Basically, I won't read the whole thing here. It's basically, we're not charging Trump for what he said. We're charging him for what he did.
And that's right, Chris, and that's an important distinction that you point out. There's a distinction in the law and jurisprudence about speaking and saying whatever you want to say, and then actually doing things, actions. And what the president is being charged with is not what he said, but what he actually did. And that's why the charges that this is an indictment against free speech rights is nonsense. There's no such indictment that is stated in the paperwork, in the indictment itself. Actions can be charged. They are crimes. Free speech, pure free speech, is whatever you want to say. And there's no allegations in the indictment that the president or the ex-president is being charged for that. That's kind of a strategy by the defense to avoid the facts and to try to see if anything sticks in the court of public opinion. And that's what the defense is now trying to do, sort of make the case in the court of public opinion. But everything that it's saying so far, anyway, in the court of public opinion, has no legal validity and won't affect anything in the trial because it's not based on any law or case law, constitutional law or case law.
Professor Alan Sanders, attorney, professor emeritus of political science at St. Peter's University. stpeters.edu is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. How important is the structure of the indictment when it comes to a state-by-state summary of the actions taken, as opposed to lumping them all, as many probably thought it was going to be, into a more generalized presentation?
Well, I think the prosecutor decided to keep the indictment focused. That is to say, to provide numerous details. I mean, it's quite detailed in what it alleges against the former president. But nonetheless, it's a very focused indictment on what Donald Trump actually did. And that's because I think the prosecutor wants to keep the indictment simple, wants it to make it easily understandable to people, and also make it easily triable in the court of law. That is to say, you want to keep everything detailed but focused so that a jury, when it must reach its decision on criminal liability, will have a pretty simple story to evaluate. And I think that's what the purpose of this focused indictment was. Also, I think we can see from the prosecutorial behavior that the prosecutor wants this trial to occur soon. Wants the case to be tried soon, hopefully before the election, so that the American people get an assessment by a jury and by a court of law as to whether the president actually violated the law.
Makes me also think, too, that once the prosecution in Georgia looked at this indictment, they might stand back for a little bit and let this one play out.
Yeah, I mean, prosecutors have great discretion in terms of when they actually bring an indictment and how they want to proceed once an indictment issues in terms of timeline. There's bound to be discussions between the prosecutor, the various prosecutorial authorities, also the judges, because the idea is that every case should be tried fully and fairly, and so you don't want there to be a conflict in timeline and in scheduling. So one can expect that there will be some discussions as to how to proceed, and I suspect that the prosecutor in Georgia will probably defer to the federal case, but we'll have to see how it actually works out. But there'll be discussions about how to schedule things to avoid scheduling conflicts.
I want to go to count 4 again, conspiracy against rights, because the history behind this charge is absolutely fascinating, and it just lends so much to the seriousness of this whole action, which is, as you read the indictment, by the way, you'll get to that state-by-state summary of actions, and you'll be compelled to say, what if one of these worked? Would other dominoes have fallen and made things happen that would have changed, really, the nature of our republic? But having said that, the fourth count is based on statute section 241 of Title 18 of the U.S. Code. It was originally part of the Enforcement Act of 1870, first of a series of measures. It's known as the Ku Klux Klan Acts. They're meant to protect rights guaranteed by the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, the Reconstruction Amendment. 241 makes it a crime to conspire, to injure, oppress, threaten, to intimidate any person exercising a right protected by the Constitution or federal law. How does that law play into this indictment?
Well, basically what that fourth count is charging is that the president conspired to violate people's right to vote. That is to say, he sought to hamper and eliminate the lawful votes of people who voted for Joe Biden. Now, all the previous counts, of course, are operating at an upper level. You know, it involved trying to get around the Electoral College and things like that, which are sort of in the upper atmosphere of most people's understanding of what's going on. But this count tries to bring it down to earth so that people understand that the people voted, a majority of the people voted for Joe Biden, and that all of these actions by the president and his co-conspirators were aimed at invalidating and neutralizing the actual votes of people who voted for Joe Biden. In other words, it deprived the Joe Biden voters, it sought to deprive the Joe Biden voters of their right to vote for Joe Biden. And so it brings it down to earth and says that this conspiracy actually was aimed at ordinary people, invalidating their votes unlawfully. And so it brings it down to earth. The prior counts, as I say, are operating in the upper atmospheres of the law, but this is a ground-level accusation. You try to deprive people of their right to vote, and that's what the indictment charges in the fourth count.
Just to wrap up here with about 30 seconds, which are you more interested in and watching more closely? The actions of the five of which we pretty much know by now, the sixth is still up in the air, co-conspirators listed in the indictment, unindicted co-conspirators, or what defense the Trump camp shows up with?
Well, I think right now the only indictment is the one charging Donald Trump with violating the law, and so that's the one to watch. It's the one to watch also because the president is trying to make this a rallying cry for his presidential run. So it'll be interesting to see how the lawyers and how Donald Trump himself tries to manipulate the propaganda surrounding this lawsuit that they intend to pursue. But again, whatever propaganda and whatever challenges to the process they allege, they're really not going to the heart of the indictment, because the facts, as alleged in the indictment, are quite damning for the president. So let's see how it proceeds. I think you need to watch what the ex-president and his lawyers do in terms of trying to rally the court of public opinion. But again, that court of public opinion will not affect the legal proceedings. The legal proceedings will be conducted on the actual facts and the actual law, and not on any spin that anybody wants to make in the court of public opinion.
He is Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University, stpeters.edu. Professor Alan Sanders, thank you for the education and the focus on facts instead of the hype. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure, Chris. Take care.